Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we like to talk about theology, apologetics, how to better explain and defend our Catholic faith. But on Fridays, the show topics are a bit more eclectic. So they really run the gamut. But what they all have in common is I find them to be supremely fascinating and interesting. And I think you'll share the same opinion. So today, what I want to talk about are the top 10 biggest explosions of all time. And the impetus for today's show topic was the recent tragedy in Beirut. When I first saw that video of the explosion in the port of Beirut, I was flabbergasted. I was awestruck. I couldn't believe an explosion that large could be. At first, I thought it was a nuclear explosion, but then I did a quick bit of research to see, no, it was a conventional explosion, and it does make my list for today. So please continue to pray for everyone involved in that. The tragedy and disaster is still ongoing, so pray for everyone who is involved, and consider donating to the Red Cross or other relief services to help those who are in need. So as I read more about that disaster in Beirut, I noticed there were some commonalities with other large man-made explosions that had occurred somewhat recently. So let's jump right into our list, and you'll see some of the commonalities, at least with some of the bottom of the list. So we'll start with the top 10. We'll start with number 10, and then we'll go up. So one of these commonalities is the source of the explosion. So authorities, as far as this podcast is being recorded, believe the explosion was caused by ammonium nitrate that was being stored at the port and had been stored there for 6 years in an unsafe way. So what is ammonium nitrate? According to Scientific American, ammonium nitrate has the chemical formula NH4NO3. Produced as small porous pellets, or prills, it's one of the world's most widely used fertilizers. It's also the main component in many types of mining explosives, where it's mixed with fuel oil and detonated by an explosive charge. For an industrial ammonium nitrate disaster to occur, a lot needs to go wrong. Tragically, this seems to have been the case in Beirut. So ammonium nitrate itself does not explode or burn on its own. In order to create an explosion like the kind you saw in Beirut, it would have to be mixed with other flammable and combustible materials. But ammonium nitrate is an extremely efficient oxidizer. It produces a lot of oxygen when it burns, when it comes into contact with these substances, to make explosions really large. So we started our list, actually. The number 10 explosion would be an explosion in Tianjin, China. And I'm ranking the size of the explosions based on their correspondence to explosions of dynamite, or TNT, in kilotons, which would be 1,000 tons of dynamite, or megatons. So this would be, at the Tianjin explosion was a 0.3 kiloton explosion. So here's what happened. On August 12, 2015, a series of explosions killed 173 people, according to official reports, and injured hundreds of others at a container storage station at the port of Tianjin. The first two explosions occurred within 30 seconds of each other at the facility, which is located in the Binhai New Area of Tianjin, China. The second explosion was far larger and involved the detonation of about 800 tons of ammonium nitrate, equivalent to 336 tons of TNT. So 1,000 tons of TNT would be 1 kiloton. Making number 10 on our list is the Tianjin explosion, 0.3 kilotons of TNT. Fires caused by the initial explosions continued to burn uncontrolled throughout the weekend, resulting in 8 additional explosions on August 15th. Of the 173 fatalities, 104 were firefighters. So here's a clip from the BBC of a couple in a skyscraper several miles away who are recording it from the window of their skyscraper. It looks like a hotel room or something like that. And they are certainly shocked and surprised by watching this, and notice how much of it has to be bleeped out because of the profanities they utter as they see the explosion get worse and worse.
What the f***?
I think that might be a gas station or something.
A gas. Whoa!
Whoa!
Oh!
What the?
No!
So that was like a solid 3 seconds of swearing. And when you watch the video, I'll include the link to the video, by the way, in the show description at trenthornpodcast.com. The fireball from the explosion, there are several skyscrapers in the foreground as they're filming, and these buildings look like they're 40, 50 stories tall. This cloud from the explosion, the fireball from the explosion, easily goes past these skyscrapers stretching into the sky. So you can understand the concern that they had. So what's interesting there is that this is similar to the disaster at Beirut. You have ammonium nitrate at a port being stored improperly that explodes and creates a giant fireball. And that appears what appears to have happened at the Beirut disaster. So this is number 9 on the list. Our preliminary reports of the explosive power of the Beirut explosion would be 1.15 kilotons of TNT. So that'd be the equivalent of 1,100 pounds of dynamite exploding. So here's what we know. On the evening of August 4, 2020, an extremely powerful explosion occurred in the city of Beirut, the capital of Lebanon. The blast occurred at the port of Beirut and left more than 135 dead, 80 more missing, and more than 5,000 people injured. Though I'm recording this podcast now just a few days after the explosion, those numbers may be higher by the time that you listen to this. Beirut Governor Marwan Aboud estimated that up to 300,000 people were left homeless by the explosions. The main explosion was linked to approximately 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate that had been confiscated by the government from an abandoned ship and stored in the port without proper safety measures for the previous 6 years. Despite inefficient transmission of the shockwaves into the ground, the explosion was detected as a seismic event of magnitude 3.3 by the United States Geological Survey. So one thing that makes this explosion really unique to study it and to see what happened was that it was captured on so many different cameras, CCTV cameras. Many people were filming it with their cell phones at this time because the fire was going on down at the port. And you see in the original fire, you see other things exploding. I think the original explanation for the fire was that it was some kind of explosion of fireworks. And then later the prime minister came on the record to say that it was ammonium nitrate. But it's possible at the port that there were other things there, that there had to be other things that were combustible or flammable to set off the ammonium nitrate. And when you look at the footage, the things that are exploding, they kind of do look like fireworks in the initial fire. So that could have started it and then set off the ammonium nitrate. But we can know that it was ammonium nitrate and not a nuclear explosion, even watching the original video, primarily because of the color of the explosive cloud. It has a reddish hue to it, which is very common in ammonium nitrate explosions. Nuclear explosions would be much more white or white hot if they were to explode in that way. And you would have that typical flash that comes from a nuclear explosion. Now, some people online thought it was a nuclear explosion at first because of the cloud that erupted from it. This is called a condensation cloud or a Wilson cloud. And so this fireball, as it's expanding, it causes a temperature and pressure fluctuation that immediately causes condensate in the air. Now, any large explosion will set this off. So if you've seen old footage of nuclear explosions, like nuclear bombs that were set off in the Bikini Atoll during the 1940s, in these nuclear tests, it was very common. You could see the fireball and then white rings or white condensation clouds coming away. There was actually a nuclear test in the Bikini Atoll, I think it was in 1946, called the Baker test, where they put a nuclear bomb, it was submerged hundreds of feet underwater under ships to see what an underwater nuclear explosion would do to a naval fleet. And well, it destroyed the fleet. It crushed the hulls of the ships and brought them down. It created this huge column of water rushing out of the sea and reduced the ocean. It boiled it, obviously, and turned it into a large white cloud of condensate. So if you saw the Beirut explosion, you immediately saw it look like a white cloud rushing away from it. That's that condensate. It comes from very large explosions. It doesn't have to be a nuclear explosion. Even a very large non-nuclear explosion will cause the air temperature and pressure to change in such a way to create that kind of condensate. All right, so that was number 9. Number 8 on our list is another one involving ammonium nitrate and ships. So this was the Texas City refinery disaster, coming in at 2.7 kilotons. The 1947 Texas City disaster was an industrial accident that occurred on April 16, 1947, in the port of Texas City, Texas, at Galveston Bay. It was the deadliest industrial accident in U.S. history and one of history's largest non-nuclear explosions. A mid-morning fire started on board the French-registered vessel SS Grand Camp, docked in the port, and detonated her cargo of about 2,300 tons of ammonium nitrate. This started a chain reaction of fires and explosions in other ships and nearby oil storage facilities, ultimately killing at least 581 people, including all but one member of the Texas City Fire Department. The disaster drew the first class action lawsuit against the United States government on behalf of over 8,000 victims under the 1946 Federal Tort Claims Act. All right, so that was at 2.7 kilotons created from ammonium nitrate. Our next one on the list is probably the largest man-made non-nuclear explosion in history. And that would be the Halifax explosion that took place in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. This occurred on the morning of December 6th, 1917, coming in at 2.9 kilotons. So you look at the Beirut explosion, this was twice as large as the Beirut explosion, came in at about 1.1, 1.15 kilotons. This is 2.9 kilotons, nearly 3,000 pounds, equivalent to nearly 3,000 pounds of dynamite exploding in one setting. So what happened is that the SS Mont Blanc, a French cargo ship laden with high explosives, collided with, remember, this is during World War I, of course. This is wartime. You're trying to get explosives out. And one of the causes of the disaster was that people were in a rush and were hurried and didn't follow proper safety protocols for securing cargo, as well as for safely navigating through a port to avoid collisions like what happened. So the SS Mont Blanc, this French cargo ship, ended up colliding with a Norwegian vessel, the SS Imo, in the Narrows, a strait connecting the upper Halifax Harbor to Bedford Basin. A fire on board the French ship ignited her cargo, causing a massive explosion that devastated the Richmond district of Halifax. Approximately 2,000 people were killed by the blast, debris, fires, or collapsed buildings, and an estimated 9,000 others were injured. So this explosion, to give you an idea of how large this explosion was, everything within 800 meters of the explosion, anything within a half mile of the explosion was just flattened. It was flattened. If you look at the pictures of Halifax just after the explosion, it's on par with a nuclear bomb. In fact, this is essentially, at 2.9 kilotons, is similar to the yield of a very small tactical nuclear weapon. In fact, the explosion was so massive that it exposed part of the seafloor of the harbor. And because of this water displacement on the other end of the harbor, there actually ended up triggering a tsunami as a result of the explosion. So here's a testimony from Maud Houghton, I believe is her name. This was from a documentary put out by a Canadian news channel 100 years after the disaster. So she was just a child when this happened, but she still vividly remembers that day. So this is her testimony.
But the explosion, I don't forget that day. No, I mean, nobody forgets those days. You can't. People laying down, crying and moan. And mothers grabbing their kids and hugging them and stuff. Please, oh God, I never want to see that again.
Nope.
I mean, a tragedy of that scale, even if you were a child and 100 years have gone by, the memories would still be quite vivid and painful. But in the midst of that tragedy, there are actually many tales of heroism. One of the most famous is the story of Vince Coleman. Patrick Vincent Coleman, he was a train dispatcher for the Canadian government railways who was there at Halifax. He saw the ship burning and realized, he was informed that it was going to explode. He encouraged people to get out of there, but he realized that a train carrying 700 people was heading into the station. So instead of leaving and evacuating to get to safety, he stayed behind in order to send out a radio message to keep the train from entering into the station. So Historica Canada actually has a great reenactment of this, so I'll play their reenactment of it so you can kind of enter into the history a bit.
God, look at that.
Yeah, thank God she's a half a mile away.
She's loaded, boys. You gotta get out of here. It's full of explosives.
Children,
explosives.
Come on.
Oh, no. No, get out of here.
Vince.
Come back in the school.
Please, get these children out of here. That ship is gonna blow. No.
Mr. Coleman.
Hurry. You gotta get these people out of here. That ship is gonna blow. The train. What?
People, get out of here! It's gonna blow up!
Ignition ship on fire. Stop train. Please, God, answer.
Coleman, there's no time!
The train's coming in towards Pier 6. I've got to warn you.
Come on, Vince, come on!
There are 700 people aboard it. I've got to stop it! Come on, acknowledge!
And so that last tapping in Morse code was the train acknowledging to Coleman that the message was received, but it was too late. The ship ignited in the harbor and Coleman was killed. In fact, this was the full last message he sent via Morse code to the train. Hold up the train. Ammunition ship afire in harbor, making for Pier 6 and will explode. Guess this will be my last message. Goodbye, boys. So that's a hero. Okay, so number six, we transition from non-nuclear explosions to nuclear explosions, and that would be the largest explosion in wartime, would be the Hiroshima bombing, coming in at 15 kilotons. At 8:09 a.m., Brigadier General Tibbets aboard the Enola Gay started his bomb run and handed control over to his bombardier, Major Thomas Farabee. The release at 8:15 when it's planned, and the bomb, called Little Boy, containing about 141 pounds of uranium-235, took 44.4 seconds to fall from the aircraft, flying at about 31,000 feet, to a detonation height of about 1,900 feet above the city. The Enola Gay traveled 11.5 miles before it felt the shockwaves from the blast. Due to crosswind, the bomb missed the aiming point, the IOI bridge, by approximately 800 feet, and detonated directly over Shima Surgical Clinic. It released the equivalent energy of about 16 plus or minus 2 kilotons of TNT, so around 15 kilotons. The radius of total destruction was about 1 mile, with resulting fires across 4.4 square miles. Only Tibbets, Parsons, and Farabee aboard the Enola Gay knew of the nature of the weapon. The others on the bomber were only told to expect a blinding flash and given black goggles. It was hard to believe what we saw, Tibbets told reporters, while Parsons said the whole thing was tremendous and awe-inspiring. The men aboard with me gasped, "My God." And as a result of the Hiroshima bombing, 129,000 people, mostly civilians, lost their lives. Now, I'll leave a link in the show description for more resources on the morality of the Hiroshima bombing. So that was number six, the atomic bombing of Hiroshima at 15 kilotons. Our next biggest explosion is one that is not a man-made explosion, actually. In fact, it's somewhat of a mysterious one, at least to some people, and that would be the Tunguska event. So now we're crossing a threshold from explosions measured in kilotons or 1,000 pounds of TNT to explosions measured in megatons, which would be 1,000,000 pounds of TNT. So this one has been ranged, the estimates range from 3 megatons to 30 megatons, and that would be the Tunguska event. The Tunguska event was a large explosion that occurred near the, and I'm going to do my best to pronounce the Russian here, the Podgemnya Tunguska River in Yeshnek Governorate, now Krasnoyarsk Krai, Russia. So this is in eastern, sparsely populated Siberia in Russia, on the morning of June 30th, 1908. The explosion over eastern Siberia flattened an estimated 80 million trees over an 830 square miles of forest. Eyewitness reports suggest that at least three people may have died in the event. The explosion is generally attributed to the airburst of a stony meteoroid about 330 feet in size. It is classified as an impact event, even though no impact crater has been found. The object is thought to have disintegrated at an altitude of 3 to 6 miles, rather than to have hit the surface of the Earth. It is estimated that the shock wave from the airburst would have measured 5.0 on the Richter scale. And as I said before, it's estimated to have an energy ranging from 3 to 30 megatons of TNT. Now, because no crater has been found, it's believed that the meteoroid dissolved upon entering the atmosphere. Some people have put forward the conspiracy theory that this was actually a weapons test gone wrong by one Nikolai Tesla. So Nikolai Tesla was an early 20th century inventor. He worked with Thomas Edison before striking out on his own. He is also wonderfully portrayed by David Bowie in the movie The Prestige. So Tesla had all of these inventions. He created the Tesla coil. So some people thought that Tesla may have created some kind of death ray with all his Tesla coils and electricity experiments and somehow misfired it and then flattened all these trees in Siberia or something like that. It's just a fringe conspiracy theory. Odds are it was the meteoroid. And it's a scary thing to think about. Thank goodness that this meteoroid hit a sparsely, really, there wasn't anybody in, there's one area you would want a meteor to hit aside from the middle of the Pacific Ocean where nobody's around. If there's a land area, you'd want to pick Siberia in 1908. Even today in Siberia, there's hardly anyone out there. But imagine if that meteoroid had hit in an area near New York or London in 1908. It would have triggered an explosion upwards of near 30 megatons. Those, even many nuclear devices cannot create an explosive effect that large. Except for one. There is one nuclear device that can get an explosion that large. That'd be number four on our list. That would be the largest nuclear device ever created, the Russian Tsar Bomba. If you ever saw the movie 2020, there's a scene where they go, they need to get a plane in order to get to safety. And John Cusack is talking with this Russian guy who is a client of his. And he says, I have a plane. And they go, wow. And they see this huge, giant Russian plane. They're like, it's huge. He's like, it's Russian. So the Russians know how to make things pretty big and powerful. So this bomb, the Tsar Bomba, the Soviet RDS-220 hydrogen bomb, codenamed Ivan or Vanya, known to the Western nations as Tsar Bomba, was the most powerful nuclear weapon ever created. Tested on October 30th, 1961, it was an experimental verification of a multi-stage thermonuclear weapons design. The bomb was detonated about 4,000 meters above the Michuska Bay, north of the Machkin Strait. So the bomb was set off there. However, the U.S. had an aircraft secretly in the area, a KC-135 aircraft doing reconnaissance work. This was part of what was called Operation Speedlight, but it was close enough that the airplane was scorched by the blast. So you can imagine trying to deliver this bomb. It was delivered via airplane, just like Little Boy and Fat Man in the Hiroshima Nagasaki bombings. But even there, those planes barely made it away from the shockwave of a 15 kiloton blast. So according to the BBC, in order to give the two planes a chance to survive, so that's what you, so in the Soviet Union, it's like, you'll fly plane. Are we going to make it out of here? Maybe. It says that in order to give the two planes a chance to survive, and this was calculated as no more than a 50% chance, Tsar Bomba was deployed by a giant parachute weighing nearly a ton. The bomb would slowly drift down to a predetermined height and then detonate. By then, the two bombers would be nearly 30 miles away. One of the pilot's planes, the Tupolev, was lucky to survive. The blast wave from Tsar Bomba caused the giant bomber to plummet more than 3,300 feet before the pilot could regain control. Even though Tsar Bomba was detonated in an area, the immediate area of the bombing was not populated, the bomb was so large that in Soviet districts hundreds of miles from the blast zone, damage of all kinds was reported. Houses collapsed, roofs fell in, damage to doors, windows shattered, and radio communications were disrupted for more than an hour. All right, we're at our top three. So the top three are now not man-made explosions. This is what nature is able to provide as the largest explosions. Number three is the 1883 eruption of the Krakatoa volcano, coming in at 200 megatons. That began on Sunday, August 26th of 1883, and then peaked on August 27th, 1883, when over 70% of the island of Krakatoa and its surrounding archipelago were destroyed as it collapsed into the volcanic caldera. The pressure wave generated by the colossal third explosion radiated out from Krakatoa at 675 miles an hour. The eruption is estimated to have reached 310 decibels. 310 decibels, that's loud enough to kill you. There can be sounds so loud that they would kill you. At the very least, for people who were even dozens or hundreds of miles away, their eardrums ruptured as a result. It ruptured the eardrums of sailors 40 miles away on ships in the Sunda Strait. And the blast waves circled the earth multiple times. So number three is the Krakatoa explosion. But not to outdo that, the largest volcanic explosion, at least in recent history, that was measured, this comes in number two in our list, Mount Tambora at 1,000 1,000 megatons. So a megaton is 1,000,000 pounds of TNT. This is 1,000,000,000 pounds of TNT erupting from Mount Tambora in 1815. So it gets a 7 on the index, one of the highest ratings you can get. The highest you can get is an 8, which is described as mega colossal in its destructive capability. A 7 is just super colossal. But I would say super colossal is a fine word to describe the Mount Tambora explosion. So the eruption reached a violent climax on April 10th, 1815, and the ash dispersed around the world. And this was such a huge explosion. It caused a global phenomenon. In 1816, this was recorded as the year without a summer. So in 1816, in areas of Europe, water in July, people were having snow. It was getting so cold that water was freezing. So you see the power of these volcanoes, that they can change global weather phenomena instantly. There's even a phenomena called volcanic winter, similar to nuclear winter, that if a volcano event was widespread enough, it could reduce the Earth's temperature enough to cause a global cataclysm. So that is number two on our list, the Mount Tambora explosion. But what's number one? What could even beat that? What's a bigger explosion than 1,000 megatons of Mount Tambora? And so I bring you at number one, the Ophiuchus supercluster. What is that? To simplify it, it is an explosion in the Ophiuchus constellation cluster. It is an explosion as big as 15 Milky Way galaxies. So a few years ago, scientists at the Chandra X-ray Observatory, they saw something in the middle of the Ophiuchus cluster, that the center, a black hole with a curved line. This is about 330 million light years away from us. And in February of 2020, so just a few months ago, astronomers reported that a 100 million light year wide cavity in the supercluster had originated from the ejection of 270 million solar masses from a nearby supermassive black hole, the largest known explosion in the universe since the Big Bang. So normally we think of black holes as sucking matter in and compressing them. But when black holes, which are just gravity wells, this is a something with so much mass that it creates a gravity well in space-time so deep that not even light can escape from it. Hence, it's why it's called a black hole, because light, when light goes into the black hole, it doesn't come back out. You just have that black hole. Its gravity is just so powerful. Now, it does attract objects to it, but black holes, these supermassive black holes, can also cause jets to fling the matter away from them. So scientists discovered in the Ophiuchus supercluster, the jets, the explosion created by the supermassive black hole, is powerful enough to emit 270 million solar masses, making it the largest known explosion in the universe. And I'm not counting the Big Bang, by the way, because the Big Bang is not an explosion in space. It's the expansion of space from a point at the beginning of time, though scientists do disagree about the nature of that singularity, the nature of the beginning of the Big Bang itself. But for explosions in the universe, it looks like the Ophiuchus supercluster, the supermassive black hole at the center, takes number one by a long shot. You do not have anywhere near enough TNT to talk about the explosive power of a black hole that can make an explosion as big as 15 galaxies. So I hope this was helpful for you. I hope you learned a lot. I'll include links to a lot of the things we talked about in the show description at trendhornpodcast.com. If you want access to the show descriptions, the ability to comment on episodes, to submit ideas for future episodes, and to take part in the other bonus content we have, consider becoming a supporter at trendhornpodcast.com. You all have been awesome, and I hope you have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.